I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on AM 1170, The Answer. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit our show archives at tvtimemachine.com. Today on the TV Time Machine, we welcome Daniel Wu of the TV series Into the Badlands. Mr. Wu is an accomplished actor and martial arts expert, having appeared in over 60 films, and is best known for starring in Europa Report, Protégé, and New Police Story with Jackie Chan. Over the next segment, Daniel Wu will talk about starring in his new martial arts drama, Into the Badlands, which airs Sundays at 10 p.m. on AMC. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to have a kundu attitude, feel free to kickstart this program as we leave our sunny present so we can go gently into the Badlands of the future. Daniel, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
Thank you for having me, Jim.
Daniel, tell us what your new show is all about.
Well, simply put, it's a martial arts drama, but like all shows on AMC, there's a very compelling, complex story involved as well. The story takes place in a dystopian American future, about 500 years in the future, where something bad has happened, we're not quite sure, but society has reset itself into a very interesting world where there's remnants of the past, but there's also ideas of the future. And society has reset itself into a world, in the Badlands at least, is run by seven barons. It's kind of like feudal lords. And each baron runs an army of clippers, which are warriors adept in the skills of martial arts. And I play Sonny, the head clipper, a regent, who is the most feared and respected warrior in the land.
Right. Your character, Sonny, what formed him and what kind of man is he?
Well, he's not a very nice man in the beginning of the show. He has been taken into Quinn's fold as a young child. His parents were murdered in front of him, and he was saved by Quinn and trained to be the cold-hearted killer that he is as the show starts. The tattoos on his back, as you might have seen in the trailers, he's got 404 of them on his back, and each one represents a kill he has made, which really makes him the most feared killer in the land. And so all he's known his whole life is killing and being loyal to his baron, Quinn.
So I think you alluded to this. Does Sonny yearn for something more in his life, something beyond his life as a regent?
Well, yeah. As in episode one happens, he runs across a slave boy named M.K., and he's harboring a secret that awakens something in Sonny and makes him realize that maybe this world that he's been in, that he's only known his whole life, is not necessarily the world he should be in. And it really makes him start to question his loyalty, his feelings towards the people who were supposed to have cared for him and loved him.
So Quinn, I understand he's pretty brutal. Now,
yes.
What is the dynamic between Sonny and Quinn?
It's almost like a father-son relationship. You know, Quinn has put his trust in Sonny because he is one of the most skilled fighters, but as I said before, one of the most loyal in the land. And so they really kind of collaborate together. And I would say Sonny is almost his consigliere, and that he is the one that is consulted on anything related to any political or war move that they may make. And so they have a very, very close relationship, but it is one of manipulation. I think Quinn has very smartly built this world and built his fort based upon his cult of personality. And so everyone has bought into that. As I said before, when he meets M.K., he realizes maybe that's not what has been the correct way of living, and so he's looking for another path.
So ultimately, is Sonny's loyalty to Quinn limitless?
No, because I think once the story starts, once the series starts, you see him start to begin to question that relationship. And it throws him for a loop because it's been everything he's known his whole life. And then he finds out these truths that make him realize that this person never really had his best interests in mind.
So what intrigued you most about doing this show and playing a character like Sonny?
I think, you know, this is the first time I've done television. I've done over 60 films in Asia and then a couple films here in the States. And this was an interesting project for me to get involved in. I started off as an executive producer, really just to make sure that the martial arts gets done in a correct way. And then eventually it kind of naturally led to all the producers going, you got to be the star of the show, you know that, right? But it was a very interesting process to get to that point. As an executive producer, I thought that this role should be given to somebody a lot younger. I'm 41 right now, and I thought, you know, if this show is successful, we've gone for 5 or 6 years, we could be, you need a professional athlete, basically, and so you want somebody who's in their physical prime. Not that I'm, an old dude right now, but, I've had my physical peak in my 30s. But eventually, all things kind of pointed to me. And I really fell in love with the character because he has a clearly defined character arc and a place to go. I think in television, a lot of times you see characters don't change over their whole 10-year run. And for me, as coming from film, I wanted to have something as an actor to kind of grab onto and keep me interested throughout the series.
So when you were younger, what inspired your interest in martial arts?
Oh, definitely film. Of course I watched Bruce Lee movies and Kung Fu Theater as a kid growing up.
Right.
But it was distinctly, I remember watching Shaolin Temple, which is Jet Li's first movie. He was 19 at the time. I think it was 1981. And my grandfather took me to a theater in Chinatown. I remember watching it and being amazed and going, I got to learn Kung Fu after that. And so it took us several years, but I think I started when I was 11. And never turned back since.
Well, speaking of learning, your martial arts coordinator on the show is Master Didi.
Yes.
Tell us about him, and what are the qualities that make him so extraordinary?
So, to pull off a show like this, you really need to find the best. And Master Didi, our choreographer, was integral to making this whole thing work. He's had tons of experience, over 30 years of kung fu movie making experience. I mean, of films that you guys may know, he worked on The Matrix, he worked on Kill Bill, he worked on Crouching Tiger.
Wow.
All of the seminal films of the past 10, 20 years, he's had his hand in. And so he was a really important part of the process because he has experience that was very important. Training the other actors who had no martial arts experience and getting them to a level that makes them be able to perform the level of action that we wanted them to perform.
Right. How challenging is the training for the cast of Into the Badlands?
I think it was incredibly challenging and shocking for them, especially since they had no martial arts experience prior.
Right.
We had a 6-week fight camp or boot camp that was 9 hours of training a day to get them ready for what the shooting process is going to be like. Because, for example, we have about a dozen fights. There's 12 very long, clear fights in the show. And each one, I'm involved in 11 of them, but each one takes, we had to shoot in a very short amount of time, and we shoot like 12 to 16 hours a day, 6 days a week. And so that's, for someone who's never done that before, it's a jarring process. And so the 6-week fight camp was really to get them acclimated to, the shock that we were going to put their bodies through when we started filming.
Now, you mentioned Bruce Lee. I mean, I grew up watching Bruce Lee movies, loved him.
Of course.
So how have martial arts on film evolved over the years in terms of technology and physicality?
Well, I think with we're seeing much more amazing physical work now in the martial arts world, as we see like those different skills of developing, integrating different ideas like parkour. There's this whole thing called tricking now where people are doing difficulty martial arts moves, flying kicks, like 5 kicks in one jump, things like that. And so it's really changed the world in that the action is becoming even more dynamic than it was in the past. And for example, in our TV series, we had access to a technology called Mobi cameras, which are like steady cameras, but very small, compact, and light. And so that allowed us to get the cameraman into the action. And that's really what part of the Hong Kong style is about, is that the cameraman is the third fighter, if you will, in there within the fight. So you can get in close, pull out wide, swing around the fighters, and so you get a good view of all the action instead of what is normally done in the past is the camera stays still, they edit every action, and it becomes a very disjointed fight scene. This allows us to do many moves in one, all in one shot, and also keep it very dynamic in terms of visuals.
Which is an amazing visual. I mean, your fight scenes are incredible and incredibly complex. It must be very hard to shoot.
Yeah, very, very intricate and very detailed. It was a challenge to make it in the short amount of time that we had, and we know why now. Our number one goal was to try and put this kind of martial arts, this level of martial arts on American television, and we know why it's not done in the past, because it's very, very difficult and challenging to do on a TV schedule.
So what can audiences expect to experience when they tune into your show?
I think audiences will be pleasantly surprised that this is more than just a martial arts show. I mean, I think in order to stand up to AMC's reputation of great drama, this TV show has to have great storytelling and great characters and compelling story to intrigue and get a larger, wider audience involved. And the story really is what makes it. It's not just the martial arts. I think the martial arts really serves the story. And there's a lot more there than just fighting. There's this political intrigue between the barons and their internal fight. There's a widow who's a female baron who has these very strong feminist ideals, and she's starting a war against Quinn, my baron. Within Quinn's house, there's the two characters played by Orla Brady and Sarah Bolger of Lydia and Jade, who are the two wives of Quinn, and them fighting for his affection and love. And then the son, Ryder, who's also trying to fight for his father's attention, also battling Sonny for power within their family. So it's a very, very richly woven story of different tales that I think any kind of audience member can get behind.
It's a great series. Looks beautiful. Daniel, it's a tremendous pleasure having you aboard the TV Time Machine. Feel free to join us again in the future or in the past.
Thank you so much for having me on the Time Machine.
I was born Mary Tyler Moore.
It's Jesse Donald Knotts.
Fred McFeely Rogers.
Leslie Moonves.
Isabel Sanford.
Leslie Renee Stahl.
Robert Edward Turner.
Regis Francis Philbin.
Aaron Spelling.
Since 1999, the Archive of American Television has been preserving the memories, knowledge, and insights of the men and women whose talents and vision have helped shape this remarkable medium. Over 500 video interviews with these TV legends are now available on the Archive of American Television website at metvlegends.org. There you can sign up to receive news, updates, and also become a sponsor to help preserve television history for generations to come. That's metvlegends.org.
The mythological proportions of Star Trek provide something that's missing in people's consciousness, psyche.
The Archive of American Television. Capturing television history, one voice at a time.